All right, so we are in the book of Exodus. So we made it out of Genesis. We're in Exodus, so let's try to get some, at least hopefully the background stuff done and before next week, all right? So first off, title of the book, Exodus, right? So we get our English title, Exodus, from like the Latin Vulgate, which is derived from the Greek, the Septuagint, Exodos or Exodu, which means exit or way out. And obviously this kind of links up with the main event of the book, the Exodus, Lord bringing his people out of Egypt. And so it's obviously a very significant event for the nation of Israel. And again, becomes foundational also for a lot of things moving forward in the nation of Israel as well. The Hebrew title, that again is taken from kind of that first phrase of the Hebrew text, which is Ve'elei Shemot. Which means, and these are the names. And sometimes it's kind of shortened to just Shemot, which is names, is kind of the idea of this Hebrew. And so this title is significant for a couple reasons. So the first is part of that phrase, and these are the names. That and there, like I don't, not many of our translations, mine doesn't have an and there at the beginning, but there really is like an and at the beginning of the Hebrew there. It's a fitting link between Genesis and Exodus, all right? It's continuing the story. God's plan is continuing. And so you have just that kind of conjunction there to show that, like, hey, the story is continuing, right? God's plan is moving forward, and that's what we see. And the second reason as to why kind of this title involving names is significant is because in this book we'll see an emphasis on names, and more specifically an emphasis on the Lord revealing his name to his people. And so we need to remember that back in that time when we speak of a name, it was more than just what someone called you. It was really who you were, is your character, is all tied up in your name. And so we're going to see God revealing who he is to his people throughout the book of Exodus. And so that kind of gives us a fitting kind of segue into our theme of the book. And so kind of a couple themes I think I'd prefer a lot or get suggested, kind of two main ones, right, is the God who redeems. Okay, the God who redeems, which again ties into that Exodus, kind of that event, God redeeming his people. Or you could also say another fitting one is the God who reveals his name. Okay, the God who reveals his name. And again, these two aren't even mutually exclusive, because part of, as we'll see, God's revealing of his name will involve revealing himself as the redeemer of his people, right? And that's part of his character. That's part of who he is, okay? So those are kind of the themes we're working with. And so the God who redeems, or the God who reveals his name. All right, structure of the book. So unlike Genesis, that kind of gave us the structure for itself, Exodus doesn't have any like clear indicators in the text, so people kind of divide it up in various ways as they try to outline it. But one suggestion that we're going to go with, and I think is fitting there, is kind of the structures related to kind of the geographical locations where events occur. And so is it on your paper, that kind of outline?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Make sure I put it on there. So you have kind of the first chunk there when Israel is in Egypt, and then you have Israel's journey from Egypt to Sinai, and then Israel at Sinai. Okay, kind of those three parts is what we're going to kind of work with here in Exodus. All right, and so let's get into some historical background. And so this is, once again, we kind of do this a little bit with the Old Testament in general and the Torah and all that. But we need to do this with Exodus specifically, because so much is going on here, and it'll really help us understand the text itself. And a lot of things will make more sense when we understand kind of the historical background of this as well. Okay? So the first thing we're going to focus on here is the date of the Exodus. And so we'll quickly kind of talk about this. And it might seem kind of like, well, why in the world are we talking about the date of the Exodus? Does that really matter? But it does, because it affects the background, right? Because depending on when you place certain things, that means different people are alive at those different times. And so the dates are significant and sets us up well, okay? And so kind of the two main views, I mean, there's some that just reject there is an Exodus, but we're not going to deal with that, right? So, but like the two main views here are what we call like the late date and the early date. Okay, so late date Exodus would say this happened somewhere roughly around like 1260 BC. Okay, and then the early date would put it at a more precise of 1446 BC. So remember, BC, we're dealing like the bigger number, earlier it was, right? Just make sure I'm on the same page with that. And so these are kind of the two main views here of, okay, late date, early date, all that, okay? And so we'll go into kind of the, some arguments for both here. And so kind of for the late date here, the 1260 BC, somewhere around there, kind of probably three main arguments are made for this view. The first one, one of the primary things that push people towards this late date has to do with archaeology and everything, some archaeological evidence, especially for like the conquest, okay, where essentially they look and they see like, hey, in Israel, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of like destruction and burn layers in the like 1400s. But there's a lot of like destruction layers kind of in the 1200s, the end of the 1200s, early 1300s. And so it seems more fitting to have the conquest in that time, because so Israel coming out and then doing the conquest, all that, because there's some evidence there with that. Okay. And so that would push them more towards the late date. Another kind of argument that's made, Exodus 1:11. Mentions the building of a couple cities by the Israelites when they're in Egypt, and one of them, like, it's Pithom and Ramses. And so the argument is, okay, Ramses is being built, and so it'd be good, logical, makes sense that the Pharaoh would be Ramses, right? Like, he's building a city kind of after his own name, kind of fits all that. And again, Ramses II, pretty well-known Pharaoh. He was in the 1200s, right? Kind of around that time. And then the last main argument that's kind of used in favor of the late date, or yeah, the late date, has to do with the Hyksos. Okay. The Hyksos, they were a Semitic group of people who temporarily took over control of Egypt in their history. And so holding to the late date of the Exodus would place the rule of the Hyksos over Egypt during the time of Joseph, okay, during the time of Joseph. And so proponents for this view would then say, hey, this also helps explain how Joseph rose to power so much, is because what? His like kind of Semitic buddies were kind of in control. And so they had kind of this affection for him, right? And so that allowed him to kind of be promoted and move himself up, right? And that's kind of the reasoning there for that, okay? All right, so those are kind of the three main ones. For the early date, okay, and if, spoiler, like, I lean towards the, I believe in the early date, okay, if you didn't catch that. So some reasons for this, the kind of first main one, the big one, has to do with 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1. Like, why does that have to do with Exodus, right? Because in that passage, in that verse, this is when Solomon began building the temple. And it makes that statement in those verses that it was in the 480th year after the Exodus that Solomon began building the temple. Okay, so it was 480 years from the time of the Exodus to the building of the temple. And so if you kind of work this out, most scholars all kind of agree that Solomon's temple was built, or was began being built in 966 BC. So 966 BC is when he started building the temple. And so kind of some simple math, if you add 480 to 966, that's why we arrive at this 1446 BC. Okay. So yeah, that makes sense. People who hold to a late date will kind of argue that 480 is more like a symbolic number and different stuff, and try to do some different things to make that work. But For those who hold the early date, it's, again, we're taking that literal face value of like those 480 years are 480 years, and that's how you get to the 1446, okay? And so I think that's a good reason right off the bat, right? Good reason. But we can address more of this. So again, going back to, say, the archaeology, so we'll go back to the archaeology here. And so, again, I mentioned that people point to the archaeological evidence or lack thereof of like the context or for the conquest in like the 1400s. That's what pushes them to the 1200s. But a couple of things to point out. First off, it's always maybe not like the best to like base conclusions off of like lack of archaeological evidence, right? Because a lot of that depends on where you're digging, what's on, right? Like, for a long time, people doubted, like, Bible mentions these Hittites. There's no such thing. There's no record of Hittites. And then, oh, look, we had archaeological evidence that was found. That, like, oh, there's Hittites, right? Like, so it happens, right? And so that's one, just be careful, right? But then two, that kind of lack of destruction layers actually kind of makes sense. Because if you remember, in the conquest, when Israel is invading, doing all that, what were they supposed to do? They didn't actually burn and destroy most of the cities they conquered, right? God actually talked about that, of like not burning all those things, but rather they were to leave all the buildings and stuff standing because what? They then moved in, right? They kind of moved into them. And so there wouldn't be very many burn layers or destruction evident because what? They didn't do that to most of the cities. The only three cities that's mentioned that are burned were what? Like Jericho, Ai, and Hazor. Those were like the three that were mentioned, and those have burn layers that would actually fit in this time, okay? That would kind of line up. And so the lack of kind of destruction, all that, actually ends up kind of supporting a little bit here the 1400s rather than the later date, okay? So that's one reason why that did go on. Another reason, going back to the Hyksos, kind of addressing them, couple of that to show why they would not have likely been in power during that time, especially the time of like Joseph. And do you remember, this is where this comes in, what did Joseph do before he went and saw Pharaoh? Shaved, right? If he was with his Semitic buddies who all had their beards and everything, would he need to shave off his beard and all that? No, right? It wasn't like a trimming, like, oh, let me clean up, right? It's like shaving it all off, right? Just like the Egyptians would have. So that's why, like, kind of there's emphasis of that. Probably not that. We also see Genesis also talks about how the shepherds were an abomination to the Egyptians and even to Pharaoh himself, which, again, if the Hyksos, they were Semitic people that also were shepherds, doesn't make sense that they would be considered shepherds an abomination, right? So most likely, the Hyksos were not in power when Joseph rose, like, to power and everything, right? And so really that leaves you with the explanation of why did Joseph rise to power? God, right? Not because he had Semitic buddies and all that, but because God orchestrated it, okay? Some other reasons that would lead us towards this, now getting into some more details here, is one has to do with Moses' wandering in Midian. So if you guys remember, spoilers here, but as Exodus unfolds, right? Remember Moses kills an Egyptian guy, then he goes and flees and he's in Midian for, do you guys remember how long? 40 years. Yeah, 40 years, okay? And so what you have is a Pharaoh who reigned for over 40 years, right? Because he kind of is kind of reigning, and then Moses leaves 40 years until what? That Pharaoh dies and then he comes back. Okay, so you have to have someone around that 40-year mark, and there are only two candidates for that. One is that Ramses II, which again, the late date points to, like, hey, 40 years, we got him, right? But then there's also another guy named Thutmose III, okay, Thutmose III, which is also part of this, okay? But what's significant about this is, as I mentioned, what happens to Pharaoh who is ruling when Moses flees? He eventually what? I can't just mention this. He dies, right? So Moses flees. There's a Pharaoh in power. then Moses waits, that Pharaoh dies, and then he returns, right? And so that's where you have this issue, because what? Ramses, if he's the guy that's like the 40-year reign who built the city of Ramses, all that as a late-day proponent, what? They also say Ramses is also who? The Pharaoh of the Exodus. So how do you have that, right? There needs to be a change, right? The same Pharaoh cannot be the Pharaoh at the beginning of Exodus chapter 1 and the same Pharaoh of the Exodus, right? Because they die, right? Like it mentions, the text mentions that Pharaoh dies, right? Chapter 2, verse 23 mentions that. The king of Egypt died, okay? So it has to be someone different, okay? And so, again, doesn't quite fit with Ramses being both the Pharaoh of the Exodus and at the beginning of the book of Exodus. All right, and we'll go into detail more in that a moment. But then also Pharaoh's daughter, another evidence for an early date, is the fact that early date we have a great candidate for the daughter of Pharaoh mentioned in the book of Exodus, where again we'll get into this, but there was a woman named Hatshepsut. Great name that rules off the tongue. And she was kind of well known as a woman who was would have disobeyed the orders of her father and was very strong-willed and everything, and actually ruled Egypt for a little bit. She was a pharaoh for a little bit, so she's a great candidate for that. And then the last evidence we'll talk about here is for something called like the Thutmose the Fourth dream stele. All right, stele is like S-C-E-L-E, okay, this dream stele. And so this is like a stele is kind of like a stone or monument, often with like an inscription on it and everything. And so this is one located at like the Sphinx, like in Egypt, like where the Sphinx is and all that. And it recounts details of a dream that Thutmose the Fourth had, in which the Sphinx told him that one day he would be king over Egypt. And so now think about it for one sec. Why would you need kind of something supporting you as being the king of Egypt? Because what normally took place? Who would rule after like the previous pharaoh? Who would rule next? Which son? The firstborn, right? So there wouldn't need to be. Why would you need to justify, hey, I'm the one who's actually meant to rule? Why would you need to do that if you're not what? The firstborn, right? And again, if you're thinking of the book of Exodus, like why wouldn't the firstborn be ruling? The 10th plague, right? And so again, when do you have like not a firstborn taking place, this lines up with that, right? So Thutmose the Fourth, right, would have been the son of the Pharaoh of the Exodus, Amenhotep the Second, which we'll get to in a moment, okay? So again, you don't have that very often where the firstborn is not the one ruling, okay? So again, once you add in all those factors, this is what puts us at the 1446, okay? Does that kind of make sense of how we end up there? All right.
And Hatshepsut, she fits the chronology there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She's the daughter of Ramses that passed away.
She's not the daughter of Ram. I'll get that in a moment. Yeah, we're going to go through the order of all of them, so it'll make a lot clearer. But again, kind of the point, right, of kind of establishing the day of the Exodus, part of this going is to show that not only will that proper background help us in our understanding of the text itself, but it's that reminder of what? We're dealing with real events that really happened, okay? And so these aren't myths or legends. And if they are real events, then what these events teach are also true. Okay, and the theology behind those events is true. Okay, and so that's why we spend so much time detailing this. Okay, and so real quick, we're going to do some Egyptian history from Joseph to Moses to kind of put all this straight for us. And again, this will help us kind of tie in all these things. Okay, so let's see. So Joseph... So the time of Joseph, that would have been during the 12th dynasty of Egypt. All right, the 12th dynasty. 12th dynasty of Egypt. This was a powerful and prosperous dynasty, which again lines up with scripture because remember in Genesis, that's when like the famine's taking place. Everyone from surrounding nations are coming to buy food from them. So they are getting wealthy. All that fits very well. And all that, okay? And then after the death of Joseph and after the 12th dynasty, then you have the Hyksos, right? These Hyksos, because I mentioned a couple times here. Hyksos, who are these Semitic people who kind of came in and took over Egypt and reigned there for a while here, like about like 150 years or so they kind of reigned. And again, kind of, if you think about what people were arguing before the Hyksos, what do you think was happening to the nation of Israel during the time the Hyksos were ruling? If they were in fact kind of their Semitic buddies type of thing. Yeah, they're thriving, prospering, growing into the great nation they needed to be, right? That God was forming them into. And so they probably grew and prospered significantly during that time. So they reigned for about 150 years until you have the 18th dynasty. Okay? 18th dynasty of Egypt, who the Egyptians then kind of take back over. They kick out all the Hyksos during that time. Okay? And this is the dynasty in which like the events of the book of Exodus are going to unfold. Okay? This is where it all takes place. And so, again, this kind of helps put some pieces of the puzzle for us together. If you think about it, so if you just kicked out like the Hyksos and all that, this Semitic people and all that, how would you view the Israelites in your land? Favorably or not? Not. Right? And so you can start, they would see them what? More as the enemy. Okay, and so you can understand why at the start of Exodus, why the Egyptians do what they do. Like in chapter 1, they oppress them and persecute the Israelites because what? They're afraid that they'll join their enemies and fight against them, right? It's like, hey, we don't want them to team back up with these Hyksos guys. Like, so they persecute them, they oppress them, right? And so that starts to make sense of because they just dealt with all these guys. So We're not too much a fan of these people here, okay? So that explains that. And so this 18th dynasty was actually also still very powerful. Okay, we mentioned the 12th dynasty was powerful. 18th dynasty, also very powerful, which some consider like to be like a world superpower at that time. Okay, so very much a key player in the international scene as well. And so that is important. Because if you remember how God mentions what? Like, I raised Pharaoh up to display what? His glory. And how is he going to do that? By conquering the world's superpower, right? He's going to show, like, there's no one that's a match for me, right? I will get the glory from this, okay? All right, and so kind of working down, like, this 18th dynasty stuff a little bit, so kind of under this, the people here. So we have Thutmose the first, okay, so he will be the Pharaoh who is at the beginning of the book of Exodus, okay? He is the one where it says, like, he did not know Joseph and who oppressed all the Israelites and all that. And so, again, clarify, it probably wasn't like he didn't know of Joseph type of thing, but what, he like didn't have any actual relationship with him. He didn't have that diplomatic thing as like a friend type of thing. Okay. And then Thutmose the first, he has the daughter, as I mentioned, Hatshepsut. Make sure I spell this right. Remember that? Hatshepsut. Let's see that. Okay, that's the daughter, the one who brings Moses out of the Nile, all that, refuses that. We see that Hatshepsut, she actually marries her half-brother,
Thutmose the second, okay, so who's also a son of Thutmose the first, just different mothers, okay?
Yeah, great situation, right? But shortly after their marriage, Thutmose the second dies,
okay?
So passes away, which then essentially leads to Hatshepsut what? Ruling over Egypt, all right? Like, she is that kind of pharaoh for a little bit here. And so, if you think about it, who is essentially Hatshepsut's son? Moses. And so, who would, after her, who would be the one to reign? Moses, right? So Moses was in line for the throne. He was in line to be potentially the pharaoh of Egypt, okay? It's a big deal happening there. But you then have Thutmose the third, okay? Who is a son of Thutmose the second, but not Hatshepsut, okay? Running out of room on our board. So he is the son of Thutmose the second, not of Hatshepsut. And so as that son of Thutmose the second, he also has a claim to the throne, right? He also has a claim to the throne. And so you can understand when Moses kills the Egyptian and then he realizes this is like found out and he flees. Why does he need to flee? Because what? Thutmose the third, he recognizes, hey, this is my chance to kind of consolidate control for the throne. This guy, this Moses guy, just killed an Egyptian, like, this is it. I can take over, right? I can be the one, all right? And so that's why he would flee, okay? And so this Thutmose the third would be that one who reigns for those, like, 40 years while Moses is in Midian, okay? He's that one who reigns for those 40 years in Midian and the one who Moses waits till he dies before coming back, okay? All right, and then kind of last one of kind of significance here is after Thutmose the third dies, you then have his son Amenhotep the second. All right, so bring that back over here. Amenhotep the second, and that is the pharaoh of the Exodus. Okay, that'll be the one pharaoh of the Exodus, and all of that. Okay, and then his son would be like Thutmose the fourth, the dream steely guy that we talked about before. Okay, but again, putting this in the context to help us understand all this is with Amenhotep the second, what his relationship to Moses is essentially what? He is like Moses' kind of nephew in a sense. And so if you think about it, if you were reigning and your uncle Moses kind of comes back from his exile here, this only son of Hatshepsut, what do you think he would assume Moses is trying to do?
Take the throne.
And so you can understand why he is not willing to give anything to Moses, right? When he asks him to do stuff, it's, no, I'm not going to do that. Why? Because he's afraid you're just going for the throne, right? Do you have a question?
So that's a son of that father? The second, Amenhotep the second was the son of Thutmose the third?
Yes.
Where's the first?
I believe Amenhotep the first, I think he might have been Thutmose's dad, I think. Is Thutmose the first dad?
Oh.
Yeah. They don't always go in the order, yeah. Yeah. All right. So you can start to understand why this makes sense then, right? So when you come into Exodus and you think of like, why is Pharaoh like so trying so hard not to like do anything that Moses is requesting? So what you see this, right? Like on a very even like earthly level, like, I mean, obviously like, God is at work. Okay. But even on like kind of a very earthly level, what he's like, this guy's just trying to take the throne. Like, I don't know. He might use these Semitic people to like overthrow us just like the Hyksos did, right? Like he has all these things. And so he's not going to, kind of cave at all in all of it, okay? And again, that sets the stage for God to do what he does to get the glory, right? To where Amenhotep won't give in, right? He'll harden his heart. God will help, right? We'll talk about that later on. But we see that Amenhotep himself will not want to do this. And that sets the stage for God getting the glory in all of this. Okay? So that's the background of Exodus that gets us set up to where next week we will get into the text itself. All right?